making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
If you have children, did you know that you are an international criminal? It's absolutely true. Why? Because you have violated intellectual property. You have violated the patents of companies that have been granted patents on the human genome. And you have replicated that gene sequence by having children without the permission of the, quote, owners of those gene sequences. You are violating patent law by having children.
And you know what that means.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
Man, it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, July 27th, 2005. Thursday, and that means it's Newsreel. Your daily report is the woke counterculture defeats the evils of the core political tyranny which are surrounding our world today. And Rant Media is taking a stand. We're taking spam. We're taking all the spam you can give us. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This is a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, Extreme Radio Tampa, and Osprey Radio. Info. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. You can, hand out CDs to your friends, give them to Jehovah's Witnesses. I always like to give them to Jehovah's Witnesses because, well, you know, they come around and fuck with you. You may as well fuck with them. As well, you know, make sure that if you've got an internet radio station or some sort of a broadcast media that isn't really regulated by the core political tyranny, maybe you should give them a copy of Newsreel, your favorite episode, and say, hey, you guys should get this guy on there because, after all, it's free. Anybody who wants to carry the Newsreel show, all you got to do is email Sumerian, the station manager, the man with the master plan, the man who's responsible for everything. I am a lowly slave. He's taken my family hostage, and I am a trained monkey. Oh, Lord, please have me liberated so that when the cops kick in my door, I will not go to jail. It's all Sim, and more Sim. But if you want to get in touch with Sim, info@rantradio.com, and he will make sure that you, too, can be enslaved so that you have to play the Newsreel program. Let's get into some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean, I've been thinking about the whole brand people dancing around the white bodies thing. Man, I have never gotten as much feedback on anything as I had about, you know, I didn't understand the brown people dancing around the white bodies thing. I don't know if it's a cultural thing entirely. I think it might have been a cultural backlash of a socioeconomic thing. The Western world has been propping up shitty regimes in the Middle East for probably 80 years now, and we pretty much invaded them with impunity. Desert Storm was a weapons showcase and an attempt to get Saddam back in line. As a kid, I remember having Desert Storm trading cards, which incidentally, I still have some Desert Storm trading cards, still new and in the case. The Afghan War was about securing the pipeline from the Caspian Sea. Don't believe me? Trace the line following the pipeline and then mark where the U.S. bases are. We've supported the Israeli occupation of Palestine, as well as guys like Hussein and the Ayatollah. They've got good reason to hate Western countries and any embodiment of their authority. Well, yeah, you know, gotta admit, some of our policy has been sucking some bad ass. Imagine growing up in one of those regimes. I'd like to think I wouldn't be out there burning flags and hating Western people, but I don't know. It'd be hard not to do. A lot of the extreme sects of Islam say that God will help them in their fight and raising their people up and everything. Seems ludicrous from a first world perspective, but when all you've got is rocks, sands, goats, and God, it might just be believable. God will go to bat for them because nobody else in the world seems to be willing to do it. Now, that is a very good point, you know, because these guys, you know, they don't have a whole hell of a lot over there. They're all, you know, mud huts and sand and rocks and goats. So, you know, what are they going to do? They want to fight. They want to have their own independence. But I guess they're going up against the great war machine. I'm going to finish this letter quick before I stray off topic. I think that when shown a direct incarnation of Western authority, like a soldier or something, they lash out. It happens in all kinds of oppressed cultures, especially during war. Look to Bosnia, Africa, or Vietnam. People do terrible things in war, and they can't reach President Bush, but they can reach that GI. That's true. The sharp end always gets it. It's like a hate overload or something. I don't think they're doing all that shit to the bodies as an act against the person, but against the institution he represents. I don't condone it. I think it's horrible. But if there's one thing you just learn from being alive, it's that horrible things happen even if they don't have to. For now, anyways, I hope I've made sense of some stuff, and that's from Arcane Surge. You know, and it's true. It's true. However, some of these, you know, really extreme Islamofascist types, they actually believe that they get a better seat in heaven because the more they make, you know, Americans suffer and stuff like that. You know, so if ever there was someone I wouldn't want to be captured by, getting captured by these Islamofascists would not really be... a fantastic thing to... That's not a good way to spend the weekend. You know, you really don't want to spend the weekend in prison with Islamofascists because you know they're probably going to light you on fire and that's going to suck a lot. However, the one thing I don't know, and this is interesting, is I've oftentimes thought, how does the... there's search and rescue squads, right? Does the Special Forces in the United States... I know that on aircraft carriers, they've got a section of Marines that they vat grow and they basically lock inside of a cage and feed them nothing but, basically combat simulations until a pilot gets shot down. And then these bastards go flying over the side of the aircraft carrier, swim to shore, kill everything until they get to the pilot and kill everything as they leave. I think that's generally their job. They're called the kill everything, go get the pilot guys. Don't know what they're actually called, but I know they exist. So I'm wondering if there's a force in the American Army that is just purely for... prisoner and rescue extraction. That would be a very interesting group. I'd like to learn more about them. If somebody knows something about that, if you could please get back to me, I'd like to know about it. Newsreel at randradio.com. Hey, Sean and Sim. Well, another one for Sim. Looks like I'm jumping the gun. I'm going to just answer it myself. First, let me say I really like Newsreel. I listen to it every morning and the start of my day at the office. Well, I bet that puts a whole new perspective on the day, Easy Rider style. Yesterday, you had a short piece about GPR, ground penetrating radar. Yes, sent in by a listener. True, I've never seen one, but it was sent in by a listener. I'm afraid I have to tell you that the info about the GPR was almost totally wrong. I'm a geophysicist working on my PhD. Ouch! Out comes the credentials. And GPR is an often used tool in geophysics. Wow, you know, on a side note, what the fuck ever interests you to get into geophysics? I never understood people who got into, like, geomorphology or geophysics. It's like, I study rocks and dirt and shit that moves 5 feet every 1,000 years. Like, I mean, that's cool, and I'm glad we got geophysics, but it's one of those things you just can't understand. You know, it's like scat porn. Geophysics and scat porn, don't understand it. It's a fantastic tool. This is the GPR, by the way. It's a fantastic tool for high-resolution imaging of near-surface structures. But unfortunately, for us geoscientists, it has severe limits. First, the penetration depth is strongly limited by the type of ground it's used on. Dry sand or gravel is good. You can achieve up to 100 meters. Good God, look at that. And best results have been achieved when used on ice and Arctic regions where the intrusion depths have known to reach 300 meters. Wow, this would be a pretty handy unit. If you got an extra GPR kicking around, buddy, make sure you throw it over. Rant could use one of those. However, I can personally testify to this. I've suffered this effect often enough when doing field work. When you're working on clay or similar types of soil, you're lucky to get depths more than 3 feet. The reason for this is that the GPR uses electromagnetic signals in the low gigahertz range, which gets reflected from underground structures. This small wavelength results in very good image resolution, but unfortunately, it's very close to the so-called relaxation frequency of water. In clay, especially wet clay, most of the energy put out by the GPR is swallowed by the clay, and instead of being reflected back to the receiver, it simply heats up the ground, similar to the way a microwave does. Well, that's very interesting. So if we want to build a shelter that's hidden from ground-penetrating radar, you want to cover it with clay, judging by what this information here says. Increase the energy levels doesn't do much about this. All you do is cook the ground. Expect heating the ground even more. Changing the wavelength does help some, but if you want to move the longer waves, they don't get absorbed much, and your image resolution drops several tens or even hundreds of meters, which won't show you anything recognizable. Also, GPR is very susceptible to disturbances from nearby electronics, so much so that when the GPR systems we use employ fiber optics to transfer the data to a data logging device about 10 meters away, moving the data logger closer or using electrical wires severely distorts the data. So if you go get yourself one of those little lightning balls you can buy from the novelty shop, you know, things you touch and it sends a lightning out. Incidentally, if you have a computer and you got one of those little electromagnetic, you know, like, I don't know what they're called, the lightning balls, you know what I'm talking about. They got the other ones that they have, like, the white sheet on, and you can see all the lightning flying around. It looks all cool. You know, everybody puts it in their chill-out room, gets stoned, and stare at it for a while. Okay, make sure you don't put those near your computer, okay? Because they really will fuck up your computer. You don't want to have any of that stuff. Those stuff is just, like, EMF noise. Incidentally, I don't even think you should really have one. They're kind of scary. So, to wrap this all up, on one hand, I'm glad that the described GPR device working from flames and satellites... I'm glad that the described GPR device working from flames or satellites, impossible or at least very ineffective, as they would present a severe threat to personal rights and privacy. On the other hand, as a geophysicist, I'd love to have such a device because it would make our research so much easier. But alas, they do not exist. And that is keep up the good work from Out of Control in Switzerland. Well... And no one wants to fuck with a Swiss geophysicist who's out of control. That's what I say, you know, I mean, honest to God. It's very, very cool that I'm getting such a, you know, wow, what a heavily educated crew of listeners I have. Very intimidating, I've got to tell you. So, let's get on to this Sort Yourself Out. And, wow, this is one of the Sort Yourselves Out. I got no idea what to do with this one. But anyway, let's get through it. Hey, Sean, apologies for the length of this mail. You will give yourself 30 lashings. I really need to curtail my verbosity. Yes, call yourself a slave and say you curtail your verbosity. I'll go look up verbosity. A thought occurred to me today. One of your beliefs, as far as I can ascertain, is that debt is all kinds of bad. Yes, debt is all kinds of bad. Debt is evil, evil, evil. It is a form of enslavement. That's not me telling you that. That's everyone else telling you that. Yes, debt is bad. Because if you don't pay your debt, you go to fucking jail and then you get charged slave wages, right? And the debt, incidentally, doesn't go away. So what's your take on the great home loan? Asking you about your own scenario would be an insanely personal question, so let's go with a hypothetical. Joe Blow lives with his parents. He has a job and has stockpiled enough cash, presumably, in a well-secured vault, to make a deposit on his home of choice. But what should Joe do? Make a deposit and put himself in debt to the bank for 40 years, pay rent in it for eternity, leech off his parents, live out of a trailer, or just plain go bush? I saw an interesting story the other night about a lady that lives off what she can carry on a few donkeys, travels from town to town, doing odd jobs such as fruit picking, and makes some money for and restock her supplies. She's done this for around 10 fucking years. She has a weblog, presumably updated at the towns and net cafes. What is the WOG solution? Thanks for reading this. Viking in Melbourne, Australia. P.S. As you well know, WOG is a racial slur in Australia. Now, I've gotten this a lot. It's widely used to describe people of Western European descent, Italy, Greece, etc. So I'm trying to think of an alternate word, at least for my own personal use. Perhaps Xenoist? Now, the funny thing is that I kind of, you know, it's like discovering that when I use the term WOG, I thought it was a funny word. It is a funny word. I mean, WOG? I mean, what the fuck? What's WOG, right? But I guess it is a racial slur in some countries. Now, part of me goes, should I change the word because it's offensive to some people? Or should I continue, you know, using the word? The way I see it is that if people take offense to the word, that's theft, okay? Because they took offense, you didn't give offense, and therefore they have stolen offense from you. So I say, use whatever goddamn name you want, but have a little bit of tact, you know? If people are all upset about that, just say, well, it's from, you know, Canada and these crazy, stupid Canadians up there. They were eating all their maple syrup and on their dog sleds one day. Somebody said WOG instead of mush, you know, and off it goes, right? That's how the whole thing starts. Now, getting back to your financial situation over here, holy sweet thundering Jesus, man, I have no idea. You're talking about spending an awful lot of money here. Now, it's understood that you definitely don't want to rent for the rest of your life, because if you're going to play the game on some level, you do want to at least own what you're throwing money at, otherwise you're just throwing good money after bad. However, that said, the aspect of actually owning your own home is kind of a myth, because if you don't pay taxes on it, the government can come and take it, blah, blah, blah. So the question you want to ask yourself is, what kind of a lifestyle do you want to live, right? Like, if you were somehow, like, if you're a real homebody, you like having your own place and everything, and if I was to inform you that I think, oh yeah, you know, get yourself a motorhome, well, that's not really going to be too tight, right? You've also got to make sure that if you do get a place, you want to buy not an apartment, and I will go out and say this. I think it is not a bad idea to buy a place if you can afford it, okay? I rent myself, you know, just in case anybody wants to know, I do rent. But, you know, I got a pretty good deal here, so I'm okay. But I'm here to tell you, you know, if you can get yourself a little bit, if you have a choice between an apartment and a house, get a fucking house. Get a house with some dirt. Why? Because you can grow food there. That may sound crazy, but you can grow food in dirt. I know it's a crazy concept, and I know the last thing you want to do is start farming, but just go with me on this one, all right? Get as much personal dirt as you can, because also the investment value goes up. So buy dirt. Listen to what Mae West said. Buy dirt, my son, okay? So you're going to buy dirt, for starters. Then you also want to look at your location. I would buy further out from a populous center so you get more dirt for less money. Do you see where this goes? And as well, don't make yourself house broke unless you can totally help it. Make sure that you've got your, you know, your monthly payments, all that good shit. You're able to travel to and from, la, la, la. Now, some people say, what if you get an apartment? And that way you don't need a car and you skip out on all those other, you know, expenses, yada, 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 yada. Well, in Australia, maybe that'll be cool. I don't know. But personally, I'm kind of an isolationist. Now, there's guys out there like Sparky, okay? Sparky's in charge of doing all the punk stuff on the station here. And that man comes from Vancouver Island. He hates the wilderness, wants to live in the deep, deep city. Lots of concrete, more concrete for Sparky. Now, personally, I would rather die. But, you know, everybody's different, and I can't stand up on the mountaintop here and just go, well, you must buy a house. No, absolutely not. I definitely think that, you know, if you've got a spouse or whatever, then that would probably be the one you want to talk to, your partner, see what's going on, and say, yo, dude, what's the score? What do you want to do here? And if he, she, it wants to, you know, buy a house or an apartment, make a decision on that level. You can only get so wog sometimes, you know what I mean? And then it's about compromise. But, you know, there you go. Personally, I would rather, now me myself, until you're absolutely certain, like if you're not sure, don't spend the money. If you're not sure, don't spend the money. You're obviously banking cash, right? Like you've got enough cash put aside, and now it's burning a hole in your pocket, and you want to buy something. This is a product of programming. What if you didn't buy anything? What if you just kept going and just kept amassing cash? You know, what if you did that? What if you just went, well, I'm not going to buy a house. I'm just going to keep putting money in the bank. I got, like, say, 30 grand in the bank. What if I put 35 grand, 40 grand, 50 grand, whatever? What if you worked for another 10 years, right? And then you've got, say, oh, I don't know, say you got $55,000. Well, do you know how much the cost of living is in countries like Vietnam? You can have, like, hot and cold running servants and, like, a manor house for, like, and you're paying them, incidentally, we're not talking about slave wages here, you're paying them better than anybody else in the country is making, and you pay them really good money, and you live like a god. You know what I mean? So there's that option, too. You got to bear in mind, like, where do you want to live? What country do you want to live? Do you want to stay in Australia? If we're going to be totally global about this, you know? And I'm interested in any feedback anybody has, because if I've got guys with PhDs in geophysics listening, my God, I'm probably, you know, really opening the gates for financial people, because those guys are like a total cult all unto themselves. So we'll see what we got coming down the pipe. Stay tuned there, Viking. I'll see what I can get you. Remember, anyone's got anything to say, it's newsreel@rantradio.com. Let's get into the news. In Carlisle group news from Evil Vossenary, one of my old army buddies. Good to hear from you. Glad he's doing well. Until now, few people had ever heard of the Carlisle group. Who knew that there was a Canadian advisory board to the Carlisle group? But apparently there is. And its membership includes ex-Premier McKenna, along with Peter Lougheed, the former Premier of Alberta. Power Corp's Paul Desmarais, Bombardier's Laurent Bridum, former Canadian Ambassador to the United States, Alan Gottlieb, and others. Ah, well, this is interesting. This is kind of like one of these little core political groups that are very scary. Even more since June, every Canadian has had a stake in the Carlisle Group. What? That's when the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board committed to investing $60 million U.S., into the Carlisle Group Venture Fund over the next 5 years. So suddenly the Canadians giving them $60 million U.S. The board invests Canadians' accumulated pension contributions that are not needed to pay benefits. So any surplus cash gets invested. The dramatic rise in the fortunes of arms makers has cast a bright light on the arms industry and the Carlisle Group, especially Carlisle's series of coincidence and ironies involving U.S. defense and foreign policies. I see. So it seems that Canada's making money from this stuff, too, through the Carlisle Group. One of the biggest coincidences around Carlisle's crown jewel, the United Defense Incorporated, the U.S. Army's fifth largest contractor and builder of armored vehicles, artillery, defense electronics, and naval guns used on destroyers. It's the first time the President of the United States is on the payroll of one of the largest U.S. defense contractors, said Charles Lewis, director for the Center for Public Policy, one of Carlisle's critics. When Carlisle bought United Defense in 1997, it held contractors to build a rapid-firing howitzer called the Crusader. I've never heard of this, a rapid-firing howitzer. Now, there's one on the way in Germany that was called the SP-2000 that they were working on. And that was a chain-fed howitzer, too, probably the same sort of concept. This $20 billion weapon, good God, was harshly criticized by the Pentagon's own review panel, saying the gun was too slow and too heavy for modern warfare. Nevertheless, the Crusader was a difficult target to hit on Capitol Hill. President Bush continued to support the contracts for Crusader, interesting title, by the way, despite expert opinion. Following September 11 attacks, Carlisle took the president's support for Crusader to the market, scrambled for defense stocks, and made a public offering to the United Defense. In a single day, Carlisle raised over $237 million from the sale of United Defense stocks. And this is really where all the money's really going. If you want to know what the motivation is for all this stuff, like when you think to yourself, why would the president be doing this? Why would there be, you know, all these conspiracies? Why would anyone fake 9/11? Why would anyone be trying to control foreign policy just to get oil and keep our country stable and go for global domination? Why? Because like the Oracle said, what do men with power want? Of course, more power. And following that, we've also got money, because you cannot deny that cash is king. Money is power. If you've got cash, you've apparently got it all. Even though, you know, money can't buy happiness, but you can at least choose your own suffering. Now, those of us out there who have some ethics, we don't like to, you know, make money by murdering children. This is not our number one chosen method of making cash. However, there are lots of people out there that have no problem with that. In RFID news, the government last week confirmed that the UK's planned ID cards is intended to operate as passport light that could be used for travel within the European Union. Oh, goody, they're giving out papers again in Europe, and signaled the Home Office thinking that maybe moving towards the end of the use of a PIN as a common mechanism for verification. The card's operation as a passport, as said under Secretary of State Andy Berman, dictates that it will need to use the ICAO standard RFID contactless reader technology, while use of the chip and PIN would allow it to be compatible with banking and retail systems. Let me read that again here. While the use of the chip and PIN would allow it to be compatible with banking and retail systems. So your ID card, from the first paragraph, I'm not even going to read the rest of the article, the first paragraph throws it right out in front. Your ID card is tied to your passport, is tied to your banking and retail systems, all on one card. Next step, subdermal. Wait for it. Check that out. Very, very scary. Sent in by Dead Code. Now, in private military contractor news, PMC news, this was sent in by Thunderspud. Three men in an unmarked sedan pull over near the headquarters of a National Police Major Crimes Unit. Two passengers wearing the traditional Arab Dishadawa gown stepped out of the car. A U.S. military convoy emerged from an underpass. Apparently, believing the men were staging an ambush, the Americans fired, killed one passenger, and wounded the other. The sedan's driver was hit in the head with two bullet fragments. The soldiers drove on without stopping. Aha! This kind of shooting is far from rare in Baghdad. The driver of the car was no ordinary casualty. He was Iraqi police brigadier general Majid Faraji, chief of major crimes units. His passengers were unarmed hitchhikers he was dropping off on his way to work. Ouch! So American mercs wound up deking the brigadier general of the Iraqi police. Not so good. The reason they shot us is just because Americans are reckless, the general said from his hospital bed hours. Oh, they didn't kill him. They didn't kill him. Good. From his hospital bed hours after the July 6th shooting, his head wrapped in a white bandage. Nobody punishes them or blames them. Angered by the growing number of unarmed civilians killed by American troops in recent weeks, the Iraqi government criticized the shootings, calling on U.S. troops to exercise greater care. U.S. officials have repeatedly declined requests to disclose the number of civilians killed in such incidents. Police in Baghdad say they have received reports the U.S. forces killed 33 unarmed civilians and injured 45 in the capital between May and July, and an average nearly of one fatality every 2 days. This does not include incidents that occurred elsewhere in the country and are not reported to the police. The continued shooting of civilians is fueling a growing dislike of the United States and undermining efforts to convince the public that American soldiers are here to help. The victims have included doctors, journalists, a professor, the kind of people the U.S. is counting on to help them build an open and democratic society. Now, this is what happens when you have mercs on the ground, right? If you bring in these core political mercenaries, they don't answer to anyone. So, you know, why should they give a shit? Why should they give a shit if you don't like what their policy is? What's the leverage? Unless you have leverage in any, and I mean any, I mean anything from your parents to your teachers to your schools, unless you have leverage, you're good for fuck all. This is why all these protests are useless now. I mean, it's important to go out, show your support and all that good stuff, but you have no real leverage because you're protesting in a cage. It's masturbation. If you're going to have, if you got to do something, you have to have leverage. And I guess to get leverage, well, there's very few ways you can get leverage these days, and all of those ways are, well, illegal. Now, in Kill Your TV News, now this is old but good. This is one of those old articles that we need to read every now and again. Dr. Shore from Harvard University wrote the book The Overspent American, which provides some marvelous insights on television watching. Now, television watching doesn't cost a whole lot of money, but she conducted a large-scale study of Americans' spending and saving habits and correlated the results between the lifestyle factors. Now, this is a study you're not going to see out too much. She concluded that for every hour of television a person watches per week, the average American spends $200. Sitting in front of the television for 5 hours a week, two sitcoms a night, raises your yearly spending by about $1,000. Good God. Indebtedness, an outgrowth of TV watching, arises not so much from viewers' repeated exposure to advertising, but from their attempts to emulate the lavish lifestyles enjoyed by fictional characters and soap operas and primetime television dramas. I am guilty as charged with this. I'd love to live like James Bond, and who wouldn't? The more television people watch, the more they tend to believe that ordinary citizens have servants, limousines, and huge houses. TV will show a 24-year-old waitress with expansive lofts and exotic sports cars, not a ratty one-room apartment and battered geode metros. In addition, people who watch a lot of TV are more willing to go into debt in pursuit of what they believe is an accurate depiction of normal life. Programming. Consumers rack up heavy credit card debt, chasing the televised fantasy or an academic jargon, engaging in competitive consumption for the purpose of image management. Contrary to popular conceptions, Dr. Shore found a positive correlation with higher education and indebtedness. The further people have climbed in the education ladder, the less likely they are to save money. Let me read that again. The further people have climbed up the education ladder, the less likely they are to save money. The heaviest shoppers, big shock here, the heaviest shoppers are women with graduate degrees. My God, my wife has a graduate degree, which may be attributed to their heightened awareness and trappings of social status. Aha! I'm going to have to phone her right now. In regulator chip news, let me try that again. In regulator chip news, the caps locker, one of life's cruel quirks, got Amber Jumbelick into trouble. And who's Amber Jumbelick? Incidentally, who would name their kid Amber Jumbelick? When a 23-year-old waitress had her first child, she began paying expenses by credit card. Then she lost her job and ability to pay the bills. Her credit tanked. This happens to many of us. I need a car, but my credit was so bad, no one would give me a loan. Oh, I'm a waitress and a single mom with a baby boy. I don't have extra money to put away. Chuck Lutz hears that sort of story a lot. Dun-dun-dun-dun. This is how we're going to make Chuck look like a hero here. Lutz, owner of Affordable Auto Sales on 66th Street North in St. Petersburg, thinks he's found a solution. I think it should be 666 Street, but anyway. It's a device he installs in every car he sells that alerts the driver when they have a payment due. Day by delinquent day, the alert gets increasingly insistent. On the fifth day, so if you don't make a payment in 5 days, the car won't start. Lute said the device is called the On-Time Payment Protection Systems, has dramatically increased customers' on-time payments. Jumblick says the need to pay up and pay on time has improved her credit score after less than a year. With this system, I don't have to go out chasing my money, Lutz said. And I want the money, not the car. Lutz has been using OnTime since October. According to his computer data files, only 65% of his customers were making payments on time before October. Now 95% of his accounts are current because he sticks a gun in their mouth and says the car won't start. Mike Simon, president, chief executive of Payment Protection Systems in Telameca, California, says the idea for the OnTime device came from a plea from a car detailer in 1996. We make microchips for auto-related things like security, and one day a dealer said he wished he could make a chip that would make people pay on time. Simon said, that sounded like a reasonable request. The technology was out there. Now, when you look at what this does here, on one hand you think, well, that's kind of cool because that way this guy gets his cash, right? I mean, that's cool. Who doesn't want to get paid on time? There's a lot to be said for being paid on time, right? But personally, I think this is equivalency to extortion, really. I mean, there's no chance of anyone actually violating. You don't have any chance. You know, where's the trust here? There is no trust. So I guess if you don't have a credit rating, you're totally untrustworthy and nobody gives a shit. Is this avoidable? Is this unavoidable? I don't know. But I do think that personally, it just kind of makes my gut feel sick. Now, in hacker news, this was sent in by Sabo. Hackers who seek out loopholes in popular programs could soon get cash rewards for their finds. Now, this is something that should have been started about 10 years ago. Security firm Tipping Point set up a scheme that would see it spend substantial sums of money to buy bugs sent in by researchers that join in the project. Those who top the scheme's reward system could be earning $50,000 a year from their bug hunting. Now, that's not a lot if it's only the top scale. Although most Tipping Point is collecting the bugs, it said it would share finds with the other security firms. And why would it do that? Because it's costing them, you know, big bucks to find these bugs. So why would they share those bugs? Many small security companies make their living by exhaustively analyzing popular programs such as Microsoft Windows for loopholes and bugs. If these bugs go unpatched, they could leave users of the programs vulnerable to exploiting by criminal hackers. Criminal hackers! Ah, well, by criminals, not criminal hackers. That's like saying criminal gun users. Firms regularly issue patches for critical vulnerabilities that leave customers at risk. Tipping Point's zero-day initiative capitalized on a large number of security researchers trying out exploits on software and aims to pay them for their work. Once the scheme is up and running, security research will be able to submit the bugs they find to Tipping Point, and if the loophole is found to be real and serious, get cash offer for what they have found within a week. Get a cash offer. Offer. So the company tells you how much money they'll pay. And, of course, you know, I don't know. This is something to look at and check out. Maybe this is a way for some logs to make some bucks, you know, if you happen to be, Wonder Nerd and you can manage to pick all this stuff up and pull off your Mad Leak, Mad Hacksaw skills, then yeah, why not? I don't see much of a problem with this. But, you know, it's all up to you, and I'd like to make sure the guys are making the right kind of money. Now, in pharma fascism news, this was sent in by the Caps Locker here. This story, I got to preface this here because this story is so fucked up. You know, all the time I see stories in the news, like this one here, like the last story I just did about the hackers. That's obviously this company is trying to get a word out so that, you know, more hackers. No, it's basically advertising. They're advertising the company. It's a help wanted ad is what it is. Okay. Now, this story here is meant to be like, oh, isn't this in neat information? But this is a pharma fascism story. Okay. This is a total piece of pharma fascism propaganda. There is no fucking way I would ever feed pharmaceuticals, hard chemical pharmaceuticals, to my developing child. Okay, unless the child would die without it. Like, I swear to God, like, you got to do the proper research. Of course, there's certain, you know, if the child's sick or whatever and it needs the stuff and it's going to be really bad if it doesn't happen, that's one thing. But listen to this one here. Bailey Buffalo. Now, this is really cutting the edge. Bailey Buffalo was 18 months old before she laughed for the first time. Born 3 months premature, Bailey suffers from pulmonary hypertension, a rare condition in which an artery carrying blood from the heart to the lungs becomes constricted. A scan showed that the right side of her tiny heart had swollen to almost twice its normal size as it struggled to pump enough blood through the narrowing blood vessel. Even the slightest exertion, such as laughter, was too much for her. Left untreated, she would die. Okay, now, to me, this looks like a surgery thing, okay? I asked the doctor several times, am I being inhuman to keep her alive? Am I being inhuman to keep her alive. How? What the fuck? Says Bailey's mother. If you're more concerned about being in, like, wow, what a stomach. Micah, a 23-year-old legal secretary from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Bailey's doctor were initially optimistic, but conventional treatments had little effect. Finally, they suggested an experimental treatment, Viagra. We're going to give the kid Viagra. I said, you've got to be kidding, Micah recalls. Viagra, for Pete's sake. You wouldn't think of that for a little girl or for any amount of reasons. But with no other option, Micah agreed, and three times a day, Bailey gave cherry-flavored syrup containing ground-up Viagra tablets. Almost immediately, Bailey's blood pressure and heart rate began to drop. And why would it do that? Because the valve, it doesn't increase the valve size. And just days after the beginning treatment, she laughed for the first time. Within months, the pressure in Bailey's pulmonary area had dropped to almost normal. Her swollen heart had begun to shrink. Bailey's health will always be fragile, but she remains stable. She could be off meds in a year or so. It was hard to tell there was ever anything wrong with Bailey now. 3 years old, she's running about playing and laughing. With her friends, Micah says she couldn't sit still if her life depended on it. Oh, isn't that a nice story about how Viagra is saving children's lives? Now, I don't know. You know, this is one of those stories that you really have a hard time throwing rocks at because they got the little girl there and they got Viagra. And this drug is so massively over-prescribed, it's starting to show up in fish now. You know, I don't know, man. I'd probably they say that they sourced everything out. The doctors said they were at a loss. Nothing new there. Whenever doctors don't have their pills work, they're always at a loss. So there's no great shock if the doctors can't figure out what the hell's going on, because half the time doctors don't have a fucking clue anyway. Difference between God and a doctor? God doesn't think he's a doctor. In Lab Cage News, this one here is just, this is one of those stories. Assisted living communities are starting to show up more and more, and they're looking more and more like cages and prisons to me, only they have got flower boxes outside. Dorothy Green has always been an independent movement. The Cadillac-driving, mink-coat-wearing, Tipperillo-smoking woman. Wow, she's like totally American. Check out the stereotype they're trying to paint her with. So it was especially hard on her family when they realized that their Spitfire matriarch, now 85, suffered from dementia, could no longer call, and could no longer care for herself. Last year, Green's family moved her into a 60-bed assisted living facility in San Luis Obispo, California. Green was well cared for, but she didn't like the rigid schedule, and living with dozens of other people made her agitated. She would cry a lot, says her granddaughter and staff nurse, Terry Wheatkern. Oh, she's a staff nurse, is she? All that changed last fall when Green moved 30 miles away to a luxury suburban home called Vista View. The standalone house is a long-term care facility for people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, but it feels like home. There are spacious bedrooms, wall-to-wall carpeting, and a garden where residents grow tomatoes and squash. In the morning, green pads around in her slippers. One recent summer day, she and her three housemates gathered for beer stew served on china plates with designer cutlery. They treat me like I'm a somebody, says Green, so it's like an eternal bed and breakfast for, you know, old demented people. It seems obvious. Let people age the way they have lived. Today, finally, it's beginning to happen. You know, this is what I should do. You know, really, this is a great idea, but why limit this to just old people? You know, because there's a lot of people who'd like to do this. Otherwise, maybe I should go to Vancouver Island, you know. And Fabric and Emma are over there. So we'll set up an assisted living community, and I'll protect it with my security company. So you've got an assisted living community being protected by a private security company. And then we'll use the revenues by people who want to live in the assisted living community where, you know, you don't have to work. You just get up and do your thing every day, do art, whatever. And there's a certain rate everybody pays. And we use all the revenues from our assisted living community and our security company, which does external contracts, PMC style, in order to generate a space program, and we'll launch from Vancouver Island by the year 2012. What do you think? Good plan? Get back to me. Newsreel@ranradio.com. I mean, it's not much of a business model right now. Give me a minute. In Daystar conspiracy news, and this is from the Caps Locker. Listen to this one. Now, this is like totally something that is taught in psych ops. You change the rules constantly, and it keeps people unbalanced. Taking a daily 10 to 15 minutes walk in the sun not only clears your head, relieves stress, and increases circulation, it could also cut your risk of breast cancer in half. At least that's what Esther John, an epidemiologist at Northern California Cancer Center recommends. And there's plenty of proof to back her out. Yes, you bet. Get out in the sun. One study found that sunlight one study, totally not cited, not even the name of the fucking study, found that sunlight exposure lowered the risk of breast cancer by 30 to 40%. In the breast cancer prevention diet, Dr. Robert Arnott claims that the national rates of breast cancer inversely correlate to solar radiation exposure. In other words, breast cancer occurs at a much higher rate in colder, cloudier northern regions than in the sunnier southern regions. John Hopkins University Medical School conducted a 10-year epidemiology study that showed exposure to full-spectrum light, including the ultraviolet frequencies, is positively related to the prevention of colon, breast, and rectal cancers. How does this work? There is, in fact, a scientific answer. The sun stimulates production of a hormone in your skin. Ultraviolet rays, the kind that give you sunburns, interact with a special cholesterol in unblocked skin. Once stimulated, this cholesterol triggers your liver and kidney to make vitamin D3. Vitamin D3 isn't exactly a vitamin, but rather a type of steroid hormone that can drastically improve your immune system function. Vitamin D3 also controls cellular growth and helps you absorb calcium from your digestive tract. Oh, it's the best shit ever. Most importantly, this hormone vitamin inhibits the growth of cancer cells. Most importantly. No, I don't think that's most important. Actually, I'd say that it's more helpful to absorb the calcium from your digestive tract because most of your body's built on calcium. But anyway. In laboratory tests performed on the animals, actually animals screaming, vitamin D3 inhibited growth of malignant melanoma, breast cancer, leukemia, and mammary tumors. Vitamin D3 also slowed down agrogenesis, which aids in the growth of cancer cells. Vitamin D3 stopped cancer-eating blood vessels from being formed, curbing the tumor's ability to spread and disrupt the functions of the body. Donald R. Yance Jr. writes, whoever the fuck he is, he's not a doctor, writes that vitamin D3 may also inhibit the activity of hormones such as estrogen in breast cancer, thereby decreasing its spread. Well, it's just fantastic. And isn't it well timed, too? I mean, you know, August is right around the corner. They want to get us all out there in the sun and having a good time, you know, get lots of sunburns going on. And I would wonder why they might be trying to generate more cancer patients. Is it because there's treatment there? Is it because, you know, they'd like to get us out? Now, this is one of those stories that isn't exactly wrong, but it may be misleading. If you go out there and get sunburned because you think, oh, well, sun's not going to hurt me anymore, okay, well, this is the kind of stuff that's said to make you feel paranoid. It's to drive cancer sales. What about the global climate change? What about the global climate change? What about the fact that the sun's getting brighter? Okay, what about how the weather is getting so incredibly messed up and the heat is getting through the roof? Right now, with the way the sun is moving and how all the weather is all over the place, I don't think I'd be telling people to go out there and trying to get a tan. Because we're not really sure what's happening with the sun right now. We're not really sure what's happening with our environment right now. We know that sunburns cause cancer. So this is a very odd story to be running without a whole lot of disclaimers. By the time you're done reading the article, it makes you want to take off your shirt and go running into the sunshine. It's a very scary concept. Now, in illegal antenna news, now this was sent in by defect, a shiny new laptop computer can be had for as little as $500. Really? Because I'd like to see a shiny new laptop for $500. A lightning-fast DSL internet service has dropped to $14.95 a month. And a wireless router costs $50 or less. So less than $600 going to this guy, you're all cut up. The welcome to the golden age of wireless, where every day thousands of average Joes and Janes are making a cordless leap into the information superhighway. Insert buzzword here. At least 13.2 million U.S. households will have wireless home networks by the end of 2005, up from 9.1 million in 2004, according to IDC Research, a tech analyst based in Massachusetts. And in May, notebook computer sales outpaced desktop sales at a rate, in retail stores for the first time. Wow, according to San Diego-based Current Analysis. Again, you know, how much of this do you believe? A broadband connection coupled with a wireless router offers consumers to set up a home or office dining room table or set up office in the home dining room table or outside by the pool. But that cordless convenience could carry a heavy price. Roughly 2 out of every 3 wireless signals are left unencrypted, according to internet security experts, whoever the fuck they are, which means anyone with a laptop and a $20 wireless card could tap into an unsecured signal and surf websites or check their email. Oh my God. Some might take it further. Some could come to your house and kill you with a fire axe. A small subset of computer-savvy hackers and the know-how and gadgets for more nefarious activities. They'll come to your house and kill you with a fire axe. Through an open wireless connection, criminally minded hackers could commit virtual identity theft by accessing your computer files, sending spam, stealing your credit card numbers, even trading child pornography. Gotta get the child porn in there. Even worse, whoever owns the wireless network could be held liable. You'll go to fucking jail for child porn if you leave your wireless unit open. Oh my God, you better lock everything down. Lock it down now, because if you don't, well, then people can use the internet for free, and nobody wants that. You don't want that. You don't want to go to jail for child porn, do you? Do you? No. Check out this story, man. It's just totally breeding all kinds of fear into the web. It's sick and weird. I don't understand, you know, personally, I run an open wireless network. I'll tell you that. Sure, I leave my shit unencrypted. When I'm not using my computers, I turn them off. Okay? Now, when the cops show up and they say, Sean, you're uploading and downloading child porn, I'll go, no, I'm not, actually. You can seize all my shit and take a look for yourself, because I am not doing that. And when you find out who is, let me know, and I'll go sort that shit out. Okay? Now, the other side of it, like, obviously, if they show up and they just check your files, you're clean, right? Unless, of course, they're framing you, in which case you're fucked 6 ways from Sunday, but whatever. You see what I'm saying? All this stuff here is just the corporations wanting to get people to be paranoid, lock everything down, so that we don't have a free access internet. I don't think you should secure your Wi-Fi. I'm probably going to get all kinds of stuff on this, on the feedback, and I'd like to talk about that. Should we be securing our wireless networks, or should we leave them open? Should we leave it open? Like, do we trust our neighbor? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of evil pricks out there trying to get stuff and invade your systems and stuff like that, but it's up to us to police our own, isn't it? So get back to me. Let me know your thoughts on this. This is a big one. You know, the coming Wi-Fi thing is, this is only going to get more intense as time passes. And you can bank that they're going to be saying all kinds of crap to get people online to make sure they lock everything down. Now, did you know this? Kissel sent this in. In Tracking Document News, world publishers of an online article stating that several printer companies quietly enclosed the serial number and manufacturing code of their color laser printers and color copies on every document those machines produce. This is the same kind of stuff Ceausescu did with the printing press. Governments, including the United States, already use hidden markings to track counterfeiters. According to the article, the high fidelity of outputs from color machines to their original documents suggests that counterfeiters could potentially succeed in creating high-quality counterfeit currency and government documents using these machines. At the request of the United States Secret Service, manufacturers develop mechanisms to put that print in an encoded form of a serial number that the manufacturer's name was indiscernible markings and and the manufacturer's name is indiscernible markings on the color documents. The Secret Service manufacturers would be able to decode these values from the markings in the event the color machine was used to print suspected counterfeit folder document or counterfeited document. The values would be then used for the customers to find the guy of who the machine's owner is. So if you print something that we don't like, we know where it came from. Now, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I suppose from a security standpoint, I can understand that. But it just makes them that much easier to track down anyone who's printed any book or printed anything that they don't particularly happen to agree with and can hunt you to your front door. It's a trade-off, isn't it? It's a trade-off to know, well, I mean, that's one idea, to buy your laser printer from another country, isn't it? I mean, maybe you could make a business of, like, just analyzing laser printers, removing all the encryption, and then, you know, selling it again. I mean, is that really ethical? I don't know. Is it legal? Probably not. But it's an idea. Now, in Monitor News, and this was from Nalo Surath, cell phones know whom you've called and what calls you dodge, but they can keep a record of where you went, how much you sleep you got, and predict what you're going to do next. Now, this is from Nalo Surath. It's a scary concept about how they're using cell phones as microcomputers to track us. At least these are the capabilities of 100 customized phones given to students and employees at the Massachusetts Institution of Technology. And they may be coming soon to your cell phone. I don't fucking think so. The phones were part of a PhD project by MIT Media Lab researchers Nathan Eagle. who handed out the devices as a way to document lives of students and employees of MIT, ranging from first-year undergrads and MBA students to the media lab employees and professors. Eagle's Reality Mining Project, wow, logged 350,000 hours of data over 9 months about the location, proximity, activity, communication of volunteers, and was quick to able to guess whether two people were friends or just coworkers. It also found that MBA students actually do spend $45,000 a year to build monster Rolodexes. And the first-year college students, even those who attend MIT, lead chaotic lives. So, are you happy with your cell phone, or is it time to go on eBay or maybe look in the buy and sell and start buying some older piece of equipment? In drugged food news from Malkav, check this out, nitrous oxide, the sedative drug used by dentists, okay, laughing gas, apparently is the best for creating the right-sized bubbles in chocolate. How high do you have to believe that that's the reason why they're using nitrous oxide? British scientists working with a recipe from Nestle have discovered this. Oh my God. That melt-in-the-mouth sensation that Swiss-based chocolate maker strives to achieve in its Aero brand is best achieved with this dentist gas, according to researchers at Reading University. The team tried nitrogen, argon, and carbon dioxide, tested results on a panel of non-expert chocolate tasters. They found that the nitrous oxide gave the best results. Not the best taste, the best results. This study illustrates for the first time the sensory response of bubble-induced chocolates in relation to bubble size. Dude, you're using a narcotic, the team leader Kushavan Ninjaran said in the magazine's Chemistry Industry. According to the research, argon and nitrogen made for smaller bubbles and produced a chocolate that was harder. And the panel of testers, that's what they said. Nitrous oxide and carbon dioxide caused larger bubbles, and the chocolate melted more rapidly on the tongue. Nanjin suggested the bubbles were undervalued in their role of food. They can be used to add novel textures, structure, and mouthfeels without adding any extra calories or cost. And again, bear in mind that it is a narcotic. You know, maybe I'm way out of line here. I don't know. Now, your daily hack of the day is the PrimeStar wireless networking antenna, just to, you know, go along with that wireless stuff. And that was sent in by Nayla Suris. PrimeStar was recently purchased by DirecTV, who is phasing out the PrimeStar equipment. This means that the additions are being trashed, are available for uses such as the one I'm describing here. It is easy to make a surplus PrimeStar dish into a highly directional antenna for the very popular IEEE 802.11 wireless networking. The resulting antenna has about 22 dB of gain, is fed with a 50-ohm coaxial cable. Usually LMR400 or 9913 low-loss cable is used if the source is more than a few feet away from the antenna. The range using two of these antennas with a line-of-sight path is around 10 miles at full bandwidth. I must stress line-of-sight part, though. Leaves really attenuate the signal. So you can't have trees in the way. You have to have line-of-sight. But 10-mile, that's a 10-mile shot with two of these suckers. Pretty nice. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry. I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those willing to fight in a time of crisis. And they are Forleet, WebLife, Alan, Druid Y. Simaru, Drake, Jesse, Robert, The Gray Ghost, Art, Michael, End User, Christopher, Noog, Kevin, Joseph, Jesse, Derek, Desert Runner, Eric, Michael, Dennis, C4, Steve, Jesse, Brandon, Matthew, Peter, Malcolm, Timor, Rosalie, Keith, Jason, Evan, Matt, Austin, David, Palmer, Jonathan, Adam, Richard, Host, Mojo, Peter, Charles, Jason, Jonathan, Brandon, Mainframe, Burger No Fries, Denominate, Matt, Jennifer, Matthew, Charles, Lars, Eric, Dark Nature, Brandon, and Michael. New subscribers for June 2005 were Alex, Jerry, Cameron, and Brenly. Thank you so much for showing up and providing reinforcements. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. If you'd like to get something for your troubles, make sure you pick up a copy of my book, The Bloodstained Rabbit. I have no idea how many copies are left. We may already be sold out. I don't know. And that's it. Thanks again to everyone in their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Die Krups called Odyssey of the Mind. I'm going to leave you now with a super secret rare track by Velvet Acid Christ. and a special thanks to Machine Screw. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.